Welcome to the official Espigan podcast, hosted by Dr. Alex Noisley.
Not all of you were able to attend the May 2023 Espigan annual meeting in Vienna. Well, you missed a treat. You missed a lot of treats. But the treat that Dr. Tobias Kunz and I are about to share with you is his talk. His talk on organoids and how they can be used not simply to explore hepatocellular pathophysiology, or for that matter, normal physiology, or cholangiocyte pathophysiology, or for that matter, normal physiology, but also as the organoids themselves grow more complex and encompass more cell types, how they can be used to provide the discoveries about these basic processes and how they go wrong that underlie some of the changes that are going to be taking place in how pediatric hepatologists and gastroenterologists treat their patients. Tobias, you started out in Heidelberg, and then is it a love for the letter H that led you to move to Hanover?
Maybe it was, but it was also the very much interest in hepatology, which again starts
with an
H.
For you.
And I was always keen in understanding the most important metabolic organ in our body and all the things about getting things done in the liver, removing toxins from the body, and kind of fine-tuning the metabolic activity during activity and resting. And I think it's a fascinating organ. It's the most important organ in the body, to my my firm belief. And I think it was the age of hepatology that brought me to Hanover.
The joke works in German as well as in English. What is life without the liver? Yeah. Or das Leben ohne die Leber.
Yeah.
But organoids. Okay, did you start as a physiologist in vitro systems, or?
No, actually, I'm a medical doctor by training, and I was always also very interested in let's say medicine with the patients and internal medicine. And my feeling was just that the gastroenterology and the hepatology is one of those topics that will further develop in the upcoming year. So when I was fresh starter in the clinics 25 years back or so, I thought that this will be a very important field with a lot of things ahead. And I think I'm not mistaken. And I just wanted to combine basic research as well as patient treatment. And I did so starting in Hanover in the transplant center, taking care about the patients on the waiting list or those who have been transplanted and then getting some trouble or not. And while I was doing so, I was getting interested in stem cell biology, stem cells as potential therapeutic for treating liver diseases. So back then in the early 2000 years, there was quite some hype on stem cell-derived cellular transplants for liver disorders, and I tried to contribute to that one. And getting this as a starting point, I was also then interested in working with pluripotent stem cells that have the ability to give rise to all cell types of the body, which offers a lot of more opportunity in cellular biology. And I did a kind of a postdoc training in the Max Planck Institute in Münster with Hans Schöler, and there I was really then in touch in the field of induced pluripotent stem cells and getting liver cells out of these.
Getting liver cells from pluripotent stem cells, that is, taking fibroblasts or some other cell type, de-differentiating them, using those famous six factors, then going on to create in those cells through genetic manipulation, now that we have CRISPR, a genocopy of a patient's own disorder and seeing how those cells behave in vitro, or rather in culture in vitro, and trying to extrapolate from that to how they behave in the patient, drawing the parallels and noting the differences. Have I got that right?
Yeah, that's exactly the case. So I think most of you remember Dolly the Sheep, which was created from just one single fibroblast or so. And then I think the reprogramming to get a fibroblast into something that's, which is a basically totipotent entity that then could serve like a fertilized egg in developmental biology, that I think this was one of the breakthroughs. And it was then a Japanese researcher, Shinya Yamanaka, who then invented this, let's say, less complex reprogramming using just four factors and getting those somatic cells into pluripotent stem cells. And this, I think, really was a strong revolution for the entire field of patient-directed research, because we now have the opportunity to get those pluripotent stem cells from a patient blood sample. So usually there would be just one regular blood sample good enough to get those 10,000 cells that we would need for the starting of the reprogramming. And then we have a long-lived self-renewing cell source that can be genetically changed, as you mentioned, and that would mimic the patient genotype. And if we differentiated the cells into those derivative that we are interested in, then also the patient's phenotype. And maybe one step back to the CRISPR-Cas technology, which is a second important revolution in the field. We now have quite easy tasks to genetically manipulate those pluripotent stem cells. Because they are self-renewing, we can easily grow subclones of the very same cell line. So we have syngeneic controls. So we now have similar opportunities as knock-in mouse, knock-out mouse models, which takes a lot of time to generate. We just can now do these knockouts, knock-ins in pluripotent stem cells as well with even human and patient-derived materials.
And then, of course, you can take those modified pluripotent stem cells and use them to do another dolly to transform them into embryos, yes?
So that's actually not our expertise, but I think that's also people are interested in doing that, or let's say better understanding the very early steps of developmental biology, and to kind of get those pluripotent stem cells into something they call, or we call, extended pluripotency, which would allow also to get the ectodermal cells, so not only the inner cell mass of the embryo, but also the outer lying ectoderm, and then have this kind of aggregated embryos grown in vitro and maybe also going to later stages that would then also mimic early embryogenesis. I think this is a field also very far away, but this tells us that reproduction might not necessarily be really linked to the classical understanding of germ cells, but with aggregation of cell types, one once a time can generate like this type of aggregated embryos that are in research as well. So it's a kind of very difficult to handle research environment, and there are strong ethical discussions also about the future outline of that type of research.
Well, you're at the cutting edge, I'm sure of that. Here is, I mention all this only because in my medical school class was Hiromitsu Nakauchi, whose name, of course, you know, He has a particular interest in that aspect of stem cell biology and reprogramming. But I've allowed this conversation to drift away from the uses of stem cells and particularly of organoids in hepatology. Tell us something of what you've been doing along those lines. Tell us something about what, tell the listeners what the high points are, the raisins out of the Stollen from your talk.
Okay, what I'm present is that we are now able to grow hepatic cells, mainly hepatocytes, in a three-dimensional way, which allow us a better cellular-cellular interaction. So hepatocytes with hepatocytes, probably also hepatocytes with cholangiocytes and some other cell types. And depending on the pathophysiology or the physiological aspects that we are interested in, we have to kind of take different protocols to grow these organoids. But more recently, we became really interested in hereditary intrahepatic cholestasis syndromes, where transport defects alter the transport of bile salts or phospholipids or other compounds that are secreted into the bile. And to mimic these models, we have two very important prerequisites. We have to have a basolateral to apical polarization of the cells so that, that the cells can take up substances, modify them, metabolize them, and excrete them. And the metabolic function of the cells must be strong enough, must be pure enough to authentically modulate this. So there are a lot of pathways involved also in getting the metabolic machinery up and running. Mm-hmm. And if we have a very simplified cell models, then probably this pathway wouldn't be regulated in a proper way. And to do so, now the pluripotent stem cell-derived hepatic organoids reach kind of a level that allows us to model this disease in a amazingly close...
Call it lifelike.
Yeah, maybe lifelike fashion. And that's really fascinating. And I really like the things that we can do right now.
Give our listeners some examples of those raisins out of the cake, some instances of the uses of these organoids in sorting out either individual patients' problems or indeed the mechanisms of an entire disorder. I'm thinking, for example, about KIF12, that microtubule sorter. Have I got that right about what it does?
Yeah, it's also one protein that is important in getting the polarity of the cells actually done. And so it's associated, so the KIF12 mutations to a couple of disorders, microvilli-associated diseases, and also probably to cholestasis. And Amelie Stahlke, who is a geneticist and pediatrician in our Hanover Medical School, she got a very interesting case, she kind of analyzed a couple of cases in the recent past. And we contributed to the study to better understand the molecular underlyings of the disorder. And this already tells you that the establishment of the polarity is as one of the key components, as I mentioned. And our models nowadays allow us to alter these genes and to better understand which type of alterations cause a severe defect or a less pronounced defect. And then using also some fluorescent substrates, we are now able to visualize the transport processes and also to semi-quantify those transporter activities, which then give us the opportunity or opens the door to screen for drugs that would either support the transport function or maybe the post-transcriptional modulation of the respective proteins to get them actively done or actively localized in the right membrane domain. And these things are very, very interesting to study in such liver organoid models.
Well, you sorted that out, and I think it was a total of six patients with KIF12 variants. And you found, as far as I could tell, in looking at your slides, the transporters were more or less localized appropriately, but there were possibly problems with some of the underlying little motors that help move things back and forth, such as myo5b?
Yeah, myo5b is another protein which is also involved in establishing the polarity or getting the vesicles carrying the transporters, which are supposed to end up in the apical membrane domain, to get those vesicles transported to the right membrane site. And again, we use this myo5b disturbed cell lines that we have, let's say, as a negative control to show that the transport process that we measure with these fluorescent substrates is really depending on the right machinery, on the full establishment of the polarity. And in those myo5b deficient cells, the transport is merely absent. So we can't really measure then fluorescent signals in the luminal structure or the cystic structures of these organoids. So to just maybe a little bit explain to the listeners on the radios. So we would love to have really cystic structures which has just one or two layers of cells which are very strong lumen. But the lab world is slightly more complex and difficult. So we have some organoids which are not fully solid, which has maybe only some smaller areas of cysts and some organoids that really show this very, very cystic ball-like shape. And so to really investigate those features like transport, we have to investigate a lot of organoids, do semi-automatic imaging, and then calculate some statistics to really measure this on a very more quantitative measures. And to do this appropriately, we need positive controls and negative controls. And such cell lines like the myo5b deficient cells are kind of our negative control in the experimental system.
That all makes good sense, at least to me, and at least for the moment, although I'm sure I'll need to go back and review my notes. It's a complex topic. Now, are you able to make organoids yet that incorporate two cell types or more? We were talking the other day, a friend and I, this is the sort of thing that my friends and I talk about, we're hopeless, about the cholangioportal circulation and the intrahepatic cholehepatic shunt and how return of substances from cholangiocytes as bile is modified in its transit down through the liver provides feedback from the cholangiocyte to the hepatocyte saying, hey, you're making the wrong kind of bile, slow down on this part and step up the other part. That sort of paracrine effect, again, cholangioportal circulation, well, for that, you'd need cholangiocytes and hepatocytes, part one, and you'd need maybe fibrocytes, certainly some sort of vascular elements. Tell us how far you've been able to take assembly of more complex mini units.
Yeah, so there are a lot of researches going on in that area. And when we talk about liver organoids, then we basically understand different things if you talk to different scientists. So I'm now more focused on the induced pluripotent stem cell-derived liver organoids, where we basically generate something like a hepatic progenitor cell type that then gets aggregated and that predominantly kind of results into hepatocytes, but probably there would be also some cells with cholangiocyte features. So probably the type of organoids that we are currently generating would be something like a mixture of cholangiocytic and hepatocellular cells with a predominant hepatocyte proportion. Those organoids that has been invented in the Clevers lab from liver biopsies, they have a tendency to be also in a proliferative progenitor cell type, which would be also the hepatoblast, giving rise to either hepatocytes or cholangiocytes. And depending on the culture conditions, you could get rather cholangiocytic organoids, really nice spheres, or more solid hepatocyte aggregates, hepatic organoids, or a mixture of both, as I mentioned. And then Takebe from Japan and in Cincinnati, also a couple of years ago, then he started with iPS-derived cell types, not only hepatocytes, but also mesenchymal cells and endothelial cells, and was creating that he was calling liver buds, so the very early embryo anlage of the liver. And he has some strong data suggesting that this basically serves as a developmental biology model of the liver, and which would eventually then also yield into a more multicellular complex mini liver in the dish. And based on that technology, others also are now investigating more complex disorders like NAFLD or other lipid accumulation defects and have promising data. So as I mentioned in the very beginning of this podcast, depending on the scientific questions, you will start to design the organoid model that you think would be the most authentic model that you can apply right now. But there will be changes in the upcoming future, I'm quite sure.
As usual, when I talk to a real basic researcher, the takeaway message is A, watch this space, and B, we need more funding. You're nodding at me, so I think that you're agreeing. We'll go with that.
Yeah, but I think the localization is very important, and the localization of the cells, but also the localization of your group, the interaction with partners, and for that reason, I'm really glad to be here at the ESPGHAN meeting to interact with all these pediatricians and other scientists interested in the field.
Thank you very much for having made yourself available for this podcast interview. At this point in the interview, we generally ask if you'd like to share with the listeners something that speaks to you as a piece of music. It could be a song, it could be an instrumental, but something that reminds you or evokes for you where you come from, where you are, and that will point out to our listeners who are multinational, but part of this overarching ESPGHAN association, that we all have something different to bring to the picnic. What song have you thought of for us?
Yeah, I thought of Lemon Tree von Fool's Garden. So it comes with quite a surprise, and it was very popular in a time frame of my life that I'm really looking back with very good memories.
If you would like to listen to the song, check out our Spotify playlist, ESPGHAN's Favorite Songs.
Thank you so much for bringing me up to speed on the newest in organoids and how they're being used in hepatocellular and hepatobiliary research.
Thank you. It was a great pleasure, and I'm happy that I could contribute to your podcast.